WHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is the CBS News World News Roundup Late Edition, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Cammy McCormick. Day 8 of the government shutdown. There is no sign of progress on Capitol Hill, just some heated discussions.
For years, you always lectured about how we need to keep the government open.
You're making a show of this to make yourself relevant.
It's sad. You could easily sign on to this.
You're embarrassing yourself right now.
And there are growing concerns among federal workers and others. Sarah Nelson is with the Association of Flight Attendants.
What could be more of a distraction than not getting a paycheck?
That's right.
Not knowing if you're going to be able to keep your family in your home. Not knowing if you're going to be able to buy that insulin that you need to keep your child alive.
And the shutdown is taking a toll on the IRS, as Linda Kenyon reports.
A notice posted on the IRS website says the agency will furlough nearly half its workforce. The IRS previously experienced a workforce reduction due to cuts implemented under the Department of Government Efficiency. Last year, the IRS had some 100,000 workers. The furloughs during the government shutdown will leave it with less than 40,000 employees.
Texas National Guard troops spent their first night at a U.S. Army Reserve Center in Illinois as the state challenges their deployment. Governor J.B. Pritzker responded to President Trump's social media post that he should be jailed for failing to protect ICE officers.
Look, he's a coward. He says a lot of things to the camera. He likes to pretend to be a tough guy. Come and get me.
Former FBI Director James Comey pleaded not guilty today to lying to Congress 5 years ago. CBS's Scott McFarland reports the case has thrown a spotlight on the Justice Department's efforts to target the president's political adversaries.
It's such a bare-bones charging document. So little is actually alleged in here. We don't know specifically the false statement James Comey is accused of making.
A 29-year-old man has been charged with sparking one of the worst wildfires in California history, the Palisades fire that killed 12 people and burned down hundreds of homes and businesses. Mayor Karen Bass.
The news of the arrest of the individual that did such a heinous act just re-raises all the trauma. It sends you back to the day.
Matt Piper reports the last escapee from a New Orleans jailbreak is back in custody months later.
Derrick Grove's arrest marks the end of a months-long multi-agency manhunt that began after he and nine other inmates escaped from the Orleans Parish Jail on May 16th. Grove's was taken into custody in a house in Atlanta after a brief standoff. The 28-year-old had the most violent criminal record of the escapees, convicted of murder, and was facing a possible life sentence before the jailbreak.
On Wall Street today, stocks finished mixed. The Nasdaq finished at another record high. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Farm news that impacts you and your community from the Midwest Farm Report throughout your day on 97.5 WFHR.
A bumpy road in Chicago. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports, baseball, game 3 of the NLDS. The Brewers losing tonight in Chicago 4-3 to the Cubs. Starting pitcher Quinn Priester giving up 3 runs, including a home run to the Cubs' Michael Busch just in the first inning. Priester pulled after throwing 39 pitches, followed by Nick Mears with another 13, including a wild pitch. Jose Quintana later brought in his first appearance in a game since September 15th. So the Cubs stay alive. Game 4 tomorrow at Wrigley Field. Exact start time to be determined. NFL, the Packers practicing in pads in Green Bay today, getting ready to host the Bengals Sunday afternoon at 3:25. The Bengals trading for Joe Flacco from the Browns to take over in Cincinnati. Head coach Zach Taylor says he intends to start Flacco at quarterback. The Bengals trying to snap a 3-game losing streak. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. If you haven't checked your Apple TV bill recently, you might want to, as the price has gone up. Not sure if that has to do with tariffs or just general inflation, but in August, Apple TV tacked on an extra 3 big ones a month, changing their rates from $9.99 to $12.99 a month. Thanks, Apple. With the way things are in America right now, all us hardworking people have is TV. Maybe to protest, I will no longer use my iPhone. Yeah, that's not going to happen. If you're looking for something new on the small screen, check out an oldie but a goodie in The Honeymooners. The comedy classic premiered 70 years ago in October of 1955. The Honeymooners ran for one season and 39 episodes, if you can believe that. The show starred Jackie Gleason as Ralph Cramden, Audrey Meadows as Alice Cramden, and Joyce Randolph and Art Carney as neighbors, the Nortons. Oftentimes, there are two episodes in a half hour, and they're well worth taking a look at. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Peach Wabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids Home for Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Frost advisory tonight, mostly clear, patchy frost and lows in the mid-30s tonight. Sunshine for tomorrow, a high temp in the mid-60s. Slight shower chance Thursday night. Back into sunshine for Friday, highs once again in the mid-60s. Currently, it's 44 degrees.
Pat Kreitlow.
On Thursday, Congressman Mark Pocan of the 2nd Congressional District about the town halls he's doing in the 3rd Congressional District, all about the government shutdown.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9. This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
They are going to become more brutal.
Couldn't cook. Couldn't cut a dude.
Because all the hippies are trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive. Because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm awake, and I'm your host, Wakanja Ade. Hey, Kadagi, to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Hey, we discuss local, national, Native news and events. And as you know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues. Hey, I'm super pleased and surprised and happy and all those things to have Dr. Kate Bean on and Penny Kay. And we're going to be talking a lot about what's happening downtown St. Paul and about the Minnesota Museum of American Art. Who welcome Dr. Bean and welcome Penny.
Hello, my relatives. It's great to see you all here today. It's great to see you again, Robert. And always, always wonderful to be in community with our dear relative Penny here.
Hey, welcome, Penny. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Penny.
Bonjour. Wabashki Benisi, Kandishnakaz, Gawa Babi Gunny Kagindunjaba. My name is Penny Kagagabi. I'm Crane Clan from White Earth Reservation, and I currently live about 4 hours north of St. Paul, but I've been working as a curator for community collaboration on the upcoming exhibit, Queering Indigeneity at the M.
Wow, that's great. Dr. Bean, could you talk a little bit, not only about yourself, but a little bit about the museum and where it's located? And we're going to talk about a special event coming up.
Yeah, so I'm Flandreau Santi Sioux Dakota, and a citizen. I'm also Muscogee Creek, but I was raised Dakota. And I've been with the M, we call it the M, and we're on Robert Street in downtown St. Paul, amidst a bunch of construction, but we're going to have beautiful sidewalks soon. And I've been with the M for almost 4 years. I think in December it'll be 4 years. Previous to that, I was at the Minnesota Historical Society, where I led the Native American Initiatives team. And my career as a museum professional has really been focused mainly on community engagement and working with tribes and communities and really having a community-first, artist-led way of doing this work as a museum person. I come from a family of artists and writers and educators, artists who don't call themselves artists. And so when I came into and was recruited to the M, and I was recruited by our dear friend Jim Denemy, who is an amazing boy artist who left us far too soon, but he was a part of the museum, was a former board member, and was one of those artists who recruited me. And the fact that I was recruited by artists to work at this museum that really had a community focus was incredibly important. Working from a state institution, I really wanted the opportunity to work at somewhere smaller where we could be brave, where, you know, all our funding didn't come from federal dollars or the legislature. You know, our funding is means that we can speak our truth. And during these times when that is particularly hard to do, as a society, I think it's more and more important for us to not back down. And so that's something that we as an institution have really tried to stay rooted in. So we started working with Penny a couple of years ago, I think in 2023, a former curator at the M by the name of Laura Joseph, who's now at the George O'Keefe Museum, had met Penny as part of a program and had talked with me about the possibility of doing some work together. The M has just finished a construction project. We tripled our gallery space. It was a $14.5 million capital project, and we tripled our gallery space. We have a beautiful space where we're highlighting 150 works of our permanent collection. And then we have a smaller gallery space, the Lindahl Gallery, off to the side, which was originally the only gallery of the museum, and we'll do rotating shows throughout that space. And so we were really excited about the idea of partnering with Penny and thinking about her idea of this sort of multi-year partnership project that really focuses on mentorship and support for our two-spirit, queer, gender-expansive relatives here in the Upper Midwest.
Hey, before we get to Penny, I wanted to mention something because I happened to the museum, and one of the things I really enjoyed about it, and I don't know if this is the right word, but it isn't segregated. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So in my years of engaging with diverse communities, and I've worked with a lot of different communities, my family was part of the name restoration of Ademakaska. And when I think about going out into community, one of the things that I've heard quite a bit is we don't want to be separated out. You know, it's great to have a Native gallery, but we don't just have to be separated out into one space. And then when different communities are separated out into separate spaces, which is what most institutions tend to do, what happens is we're not in communication with one another and we're not connecting. And so really thinking about connections across time, across place, across culture, you know, we can show the historic paintings and drawings that the museum has collected over the years, because the museum's been around. It started as a school in the 1890s. It's been around for a long time, and we can show those historic works alongside contemporary works, better representation of Minnesota. And the way that we do that is through connecting and making sure that we are throughout the space. And I've heard that a lot from Native artists who come in. They're like, it's so wonderful to see Native art. And then you walk a few feet and you see more, and then you see more. And then we have a sort of a grand finale of the George Morrison Room.
Yeah, I really appreciated that when I went down there. And I think you mentioned it because I'm a little slow. And then it was like, oh, you're right. It is spread around. It's really, it's very awesome and very intentional. Penny, so how do you fit in all this? And it's thank you for being on the show, by the way, too.
I'm really grateful to be here. I'm grateful for your highlighting Queering Indigeneity. I came in, so like there's like a larger community collaboration. Sometimes I think of the exhibit as like it's a side order of an exhibit that goes on with this larger movement that's occurring. And it's about empowering and uplifting two-spirit and Native queer people everywhere. And I was working with collaborators here at White Earth in 2022, and someone had suggested that this could be an exhibit. Part of the work I had focused on in 2022 was like professional development, helping these artists like move themselves along, you know, however they chose to, and give them different ideas and maybe how they could exhibit their work. And the idea of us coming together as a group exhibition, I'm surprised to find myself here. This is my first gig as a curator. But being able to reach out to, I already had the relationship with Laura Joseph, being able to reach out to her in a way that felt safe. And, you know, she was, and her conversation with Kate, and they just gave me just an immediate response that they were enthusiastic. They could see what this could be. And I've been throughout this process as a curator. I've been mentored in this work, but then we've also been able to reach out to 15 artists from the upper Midwest, and in a lot of them are emerging artists. And part of that is I feel like they came into the exhibit because they're community activists, they're community advocates. And I felt like they would have something to say about moving us from being tolerated to being celebrated.
Wow, really good point. Hey, we got like less than a minute here before the segment's over. Can we talk about Dr. Bean? Could you quickly say the day and the time and the address real quick for the segment, and then we'll get into the next one?
Yeah, so the reception for this wonderful project will be October 11th, this Saturday, from 4 to 9. We have speakers at 5:30. So come in, we're going to have a DJ, we're going to have all of the artists are coming in and bringing their families, and it's just going to be a big community party and celebration of all this amazing work. And we're downtown in the lower town area of St. Paul at 350 Robert Street. Yeah. And so come and see us. Where parking is a little difficult, but on the evenings, it shouldn't be too bad. And there's a number of parking garages around, as well as street
parking. Right on. Hey, this is Native Roots Radio, and we'll be right back after this short break. Please stay with us. Ho-wah.
The Minneapolis Police Department is hiring, and we're looking for people ready to lead, serve, and reflect the communities we protect.
Whether you're a new graduate, changing careers, or already in law enforcement, there's a path for you to join our department.
With top-tier pay, full benefits, paid training, and a direct path to making a difference, this is more than a job. This is your chance to shape the future of Minneapolis Police.
Choose service. Choose leadership. Choose Minneapolis. Visit our city website to learn more.
Ever wonder how far you could go with a bachelor's or master's degree? Metro State University is hosting two open house events in October. Learn about their bachelor's degree programs on October 20th. Explore master's degrees and doctoral degrees on October 23rd. At the open house, you can attend a session about financial aid and receive help from financial aid staff. Discover how Metro State can help you take the next step in your career. Sign up today at metrostate.edu/openhouse. You belong at Metro.
The city of Minneapolis is now on Native Roots Radio with Minneapolis AIR. AIR stands for American Indian Relations. Guest host Christine McDonald talks to people about important things affecting the city's Native communities. Minneapolis AIR dives into topics like public safety, public health, elections, and so much more. Tune in to Minneapolis AIR on Native Roots Radio from 5 to 6 p.m. on the second Wednesday of every month, right here on AM 950.
Four Sisters Farmers Market is more than a place to shop for delicious organic food. It's a celebration of indigenous culture, food sovereignty, and community. Now in its 11th season, the market offers healthy, affordable, culturally appropriate local foods every Thursday from 11 to 3. Located on the American Indian Cultural Corridor off Franklin Avenue, Four Sisters Farmers Market is a project of NACD. Every Thursday now through October, discover more about Four Sisters Farmers Market by visiting NACDI.org.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio. This is Spirit from Reservation Dogs. Get up and listen.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awakened. This is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back, everybody, here. And I am here with Dr. Kate Bean and Penny Kay. Ho-wa. Hey, and we're talking about a lot of great things here. We're talking about the M, and I'm glad I can just say the M instead of Minnesota Museum of American Art, because, you know, I have a great voice, but I'm pretty, it's hard for me to read sometimes. But hey, that's another story. Welcome back, and let's talk a little bit about the event and the artists and what's happening. Welcome back, Dr. Bean.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, the M. So the M's been around since 1890s and started as a school, a St. Paul School of Fine Arts. And we're super excited to be in our new permanent facility in the Pioneer Endicott building in downtown St. Paul. The artists that are coming into town, I think most, if not all of them, should be coming for the opening reception. The exhibit itself has been open since September 18th, and it runs for 11 months. So you have plenty of time to come in and see it. But we really urge folks to come in and meet the artists on October 11th from 4 to 9. Speakers will be at 5:30. Really like to see people in the museum, see the permanent collection show as well as the new show, and just welcome you into our space.
That's awesome. Penny, let's talk a little bit about what you'll be doing and your job with the artists and curating.
So a lot of the intentional work for this project in general is to provide just like mutual community support. So it's, you know, it's not just me, but like creating a network within this 15 artists that are participating. And then we've focused a lot on some professional development aspects. So offering them professional headshots and helping with writing of bios and artist statements and having their artwork. There's about 60 pieces of artwork. Most of it's produced for this show, but most we've had it all photographed professionally so that they'll have that for their professional development, or they're applying for exhibits or applications for fellowships, you know, to show the work that they've done as a part of this larger project.
Well, that's exciting. And how did this, Dr. Bean, how did this collaboration come about? Because this sounds exciting, and it sounds like a full-time job that Penny's doing.
Yeah, so the M, we really work differently than other institutions do. And what I mean by that is everything that we do is in partnership. So we co-curate exhibitions, including with those who've never curated before, such as Penny. And part of that process is sharing knowledge and expertise all the way around so that partners that we work with can take that information and those relationships and that knowledge and continue on. We like to have multi-year projects where it's not a one and done. You know, we work with somebody on a project, different iteration down the line, continue to support in terms of funding sources and looking at ways in which we can support through our networks. We don't see exhibitions as this static just place to show. It really is about connection. It's creating a space and a platform for people to come connect, and for diverse representation, for diverse voices to have a platform to speak their truth, to feel that power of being in community and to know that they're supported.
Wow, that's awesome. Penny, what have you learned by, I know you've been around the museum for years, but as that you didn't learn or you didn't know as a curator, what have you learned?
Well, I've been really fortunate in this, and first being mentored by Laura Joseph, and then also for the last 15 months, I've been mentored by Ben Gessner. He's the project manager and curating support that I have for this exhibit. And actually, there's been a lot, like, you know, what goes on behind the scenes. There's no way that I can just drop off a piece of artwork, you know, like 2 days before the show starts and I think that I'm going to get something into the exhibit. There's a lot of prep work that goes into with the, like, where it's going to go within the exhibit, thought about like how it's going to be impactful for the visitor to learn about the different aspects of the exhibit based on where things are placed, lighting, painting the walls, creating just even the information that goes on the walls about, you know, who the artist is, what their intention is with this piece that they've brought forward. It's been a really great learning experience in that way. With this collaboration itself, one of the things I was looking for was, I feel like we're told occasionally I've been told that by traditional elders that being queer or being two-spirit is a European concept because we're not found in our oral tradition. And as part of this collaboration, one of the participants was able to tell me about Ojibwe origin story that I've been hearing about for 30 years. But this time, the way she told the story, Two-Spirit people were present in there, and we were there providing balance and perspective for people as star people descended and were placed here on Turtle Island. And so that's been real eye-opening to me, because it feels like, as part of assimilation, as a part of bowing down to Christian organizations with boarding schools, that we were removed from our own oral traditions. And this is a large, a lot of work to bring us back, to empower us, to affirm us.
Well, I totally agree. And I've heard from my tribe, from people that when the colonizers came here, they went after the Two-Spirit first and our medicine people. And so I've heard that too. And I think sometimes when, like you said, with the boarding school and the education and our own relatives getting colonized, they forget how important the Two-Spirit were and have been and still are.
Thank you for affirming that, because really, and one of my things is I'm always looking at what's the inverse. If it was important for them to remove us, how important it is for us to be put back into place for healthy communities. So that's like a key piece of like how this all works for me. It's like, if it was so important to have us taken out, think how important it'll be for the whole community to bring us back in where we're supposed to be.
Yeah, bravo to that. I agree 100%. Dr. Bean, I didn't realize when Penny just went through the whole thing of what she needed to do, cross the T's and dot the I's, and even to a place card about the artist, there's a lot to be done before there's a action like this. Who picked the artist?
So Penny and was the person who helped facilitate that part of the project and network and communicated with the artists. Our team, the way that we work is that we essentially have a community partner. Community partner has a vision, something that they're mulling over, and our team helps bring that vision to life within a space. We sort of have this room that's kind of like a blank slate. Build walls, tear down walls, painting, creating all kinds of different, every exhibit looks completely different. And it's a really beautiful transition to see that happen and to be able to see these ideas come into life. And again, the exhibition itself is a piece of these relationships and these projects. But it's kind of a starting point, to showcase and share. But I know Penny, in terms of where she's situated, more north of us here in Minnesota, Mokoche, ended up communicating with a lot of artists, Ojibwe, Métis, and the Dakota artists up north.
Cool. Very cool. I'd love to see something eventually done like on Natives in the Media, whether it's film or radio or something like that, because we forget, and this is kind of off talk, but I always have Robert Lilligren on my show. His father, Chuck Lilligren, was on the radio when I was a kid every morning for 30 some years on WCCO, which was it still is a 100,000 watt station. So people knew his dad and his Ojibwe-ness, and it's just really interesting that we have stories like that too.
Yeah, and I remember being interviewed by Laura Whitstock and Roy Esker years ago with my dad. And
yes,
and now we've.
Oh, you had a documentary. You had a documentary, and that's media too.
My dad's a filmmaker. He his documentary "Ohiye to the Soul of an Indian" is available on Amazon Prime. Short little plug. And he's working on his next project, which is a film with Leah Hale. Actually, who's Dene and Dakota through Twin Cities Public Television. And that's a film about the history of Native basketball.
Wow, that's very cool. Yeah, awesome. And I know I'm a filmmaker too, and my next project is about adoptees. So, and working with Sandy at Whitehawk on that. And we have stories to tell, and they're being told, and they're being told this weekend. So Penny, I'm going to, we got less than we got about a minute left. I want to give you the last word here on what's happening this weekend.
So yeah, this weekend we're going to see, I believe we're going to have like 100% of the artists that are part of the exhibit will be at the reception, something I've never seen before.
Locally grown radio, WFHR. CBS News Special Report. President Trump says on social media that Israel and Hamas have agreed to the first phase of his peace plan to end the war in Gaza, which means all of the hostages will be released very soon. And he says Israel will withdraw its troops to an agreed-upon line. CBS's Ed O'Keefe.
It was Egypt's President al-Sisi who invited the president to come to Egypt this weekend. If a deal is set to be announced, the president told reporters that he would go to the Middle East this weekend if a deal comes together.
CBS's Deborah Patta in Israel.
We do know that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu will convene a security meeting of his cabinet to discuss and approve this plan and to make sure it goes forward.
Mona Yacoubian with the Center for Strategic and International Studies says of the U.S. putting pressure on Israel's Netanyahu.
I think that made a critical difference in getting this current first phase of this ceasefire over the finish line.
CBS News Special Report, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
97.5 WFHR, locally grown radio, and home to mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
A bumpy road in Chicago. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports, baseball, game three of the NLDS. The Brewers losing tonight in Chicago, 4-3 to the Cubs. Starting pitcher Quinn Priester giving up three runs, including a home run to the Cubs' Michael Busch, just in the first inning. Priester pulled after throwing 39 pitches, followed by Nick Mears with another 13, including a wild pitch. Jose Quintana later brought in his first appearance in a game since September 15th. So the Cubs stay alive. Game four tomorrow at Wrigley Field. Exact start time to be determined. NFL, the Packers practicing in pads in Green Bay today, getting ready to host the Bengals Sunday afternoon at 3:25, the Bengals trading for Joe Flacco from the Browns to take over in Cincinnati. Head coach Zach Taylor says he intends to start Flacco at quarterback. The Bengals trying to snap a three-game losing streak. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids home for the Todd Allball Show, weekday afternoons from 2 to 4.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. In 2007, co-hosts of The View, Rosie O'Donnell and Elizabeth Hasselbeck, came to blows on the set. Can't believe I missed that. The skirmish was over an argument about the Iraq War. O'Donnell recently appeared on the Ricky Lee, Tim, and Joel podcast and said she feels like the producer set the whole thing up. O'Donnell came to this conclusion when she realized there was a split screen being used for the whole episode. O'Donnell left the show shortly after. Hasselbeck stayed on until 2013. I Play Rocky is a new film about the making of the film Rocky. The Peter Farrelly directed movie is currently in production and has announced that Matt Dillon will play Frank Stallone Sr., Sylvester Stallone's father in real life. The film will tell the story of Sylvester Stallone's struggles as an actor until he wrote Rocky and stuck to his guns while fighting for the chance to play the title character in his own script. Rocky went on to win the Academy Award for Best Picture in 1977. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Frost advisory tonight, mostly clear, patchy frost and lows in the mid-30s tonight. Sunshine for tomorrow, a high temp in the mid-60s. Slight shower chance Thursday night. Back into sunshine for Friday, highs once again in the mid-60s. It's 42 right now.
Does a 2025 federal law cut funding for some emergency broadcast alerts? Yes. A law signed by President Donald Trump on July 24th rescinds $9 billion, including $1.1 billion from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, or CPB. CPB, which funds NPR, PBS, and affiliates, announced it would shut down. Smaller rural stations rely heavily on CPB for weather and emergency alerts. Wisconsin stations got $8.5 million in 2024. The cuts led to a back and forth between Representative Derek Van Orden and Senator Tammy Baldwin on X over whether emergency broadcast alerts would be affected. I'm Trisha Young for Wisconsin Watch. Fact briefs are bite-sized fact checks of trending claims produced by Wisconsin Watch and GigaFact. Read more at wisconsinwatch.org.
Maggie Dawn.
At 5 o'clock, I'm joined by UW Law Professor Josh Braver, an expert in civil-military relations. We discuss the growing National Guard deployments across our country. Don't miss it.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Oh-ho!
this is Dallas Goldtooth, and you're listening to the Native Roots Radio. Hoka, hecha, wecha.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, Cudahy, welcome back to everyone. This is Native Roots Radio. Hey, I have this groovy guest on today, and we have some serious things to talk about. Nita Vongpeth. Nina, I've been running into you a lot lately. I haven't seen you in like 2 years, and all of a sudden I've seen you like three times, and now you're on the radio show. I guess the stars are in the right place. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, that's our four directions, fourth time, right?
Yeah, that's a good one. Good one. Hey, tell us a little bit about yourself. I have your bio here, but I think it's always cool that we're able to have you talk about yourself in a good way. And then we'll talk about what's happening here in the community and what this serious epidemic we're going to talk about, and maybe some solutions and an event. So thanks again for coming on.
Yeah, thank you for having me. So Hamatakyapi. My name is Nina Vongpeth. Originally from Lower Sioux Indian Community. I grew up there. So that is where I like to call home. And I came to the metro area in my early adulthood to be here for career and educational opportunity. So now I'm currently the American Indian Liaison working with Hennepin County, leading two initiatives there. One of them is the Land and Water Acknowledgement Action work that they have. So carrying on the work of Allison Waka and the work that she did within this role. But then another area is supporting with community engagement, specifically under our opioid response initiative here at Hennepin County, and really uplifting our American Indian community and the impact that we feel with many of the disparities that Hennepin County has committed to eliminating as of recent here in 2025.
Yeah, we know it's a huge problem for our community, and we only have less than 3% of the population, but we have such a high percentage of people that are out there unhoused and having the drug problems and things like that. So it's really good. We really love to talk about solutions here on Native Roots Radio and action. And so it's great to have you on and talk about this. And we're not keeping our head in the sand. We're doing stuff about it. So that's really good, Nina.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the thing that's coming up, and then how people can get involved.
Yeah. So for Hennepin County, we have really wanted to bring in community engagement within the work that we've done regarding the opioid response initiative. As I mentioned, I'm a big part of. And what Hennepin County Opioid Leadership has done is put community events into community to be able to provide the information to community in terms of where funding is going and what those programs are doing to respond to the crisis within community. And so we are fortunate to be able to host our upcoming American Indian Opioid Response Forum. It'll be Wednesday, October 22nd, and it will be in community at the Indian Center from 5 to 7:30. We will be providing a light feast for community members to come and take part in, but then we also will have a panel with our community organizations that are currently funded under our opioid settlement dollars to provide context and information on their programs, on how they're reaching our relatives that are heavily impacted by the opioid crisis, as well as allow time for community to be in space with us and have the opportunity to answer questions and how Hennepin County is responding, but also a time to really share their experience with the impact we feel as community.
Right. And Nina, I know everyone that's related to anybody we have, somebody in our family or in our relations has an issue. So it'll be great for people to come out and go to this this meeting and speak their mind and also hear some possible solutions and good medicine, but just building community and being in community together really helps with that too.
Yeah, and I think for me, it's just really trying to uplift community voice, right? You know, it's, we think from a system side that we know the answers, we know what the impact is. But me also being on the other side as a community member and having family impacted, myself being impacted, knowing that not all of that lives within systems and how systems really try to design and answer to those problems. But so really wanting to hear from community and really wanting to provide that space for a community to be comfortable to come in and share those experiences so that we know as a county how to respond to the needs of the community. And it really takes community voice to really uplift that and bring that. And so we have our ongoing relationships specifically with our few community organizations and community meetings, but just always trying to make sure we provide opportunity and that access for a community to come into the same room, not only with me, but also Hennepin County leadership to be able to answer our questions and get the right information, especially when it comes to funding and programs that are available to us.
So. Yeah. So you are like boots on the ground with our community. I always want to ask this to community leaders like yourself. What do you do to take care of yourself and your soul? I mean, this is heavy work that you're doing, and it's sometimes thankless. So what? How do you take care of yourself?
Well, I first have to say that I am not the one who is boots on the ground. There are others that are doing that street outreach out there for a number of hours a day and mm-hmm. ongoing. You know, they're out there, whether our community is experiencing violence, whether our community is just experiencing a hot day or a cold day. I am more just the one that I want those voices of those that are out there to really be elevated and to know that they have things to share in terms of what they see and what they hear and what they're being told, specifically by our relatives that are out there that they are supporting and trying to connect to those resources. So for me, I just find honor in bringing all of the voices to where they really need to be. But for me to be able to, you know, come back to being centered is coming back to our culture. Yeah. You know, there's times where I won't know what to say. I'll get caught up in thinking, what is the solution? What needs to come next? And the thought that has been coming to my mind for some years now is to put my tobacco out, to mm-hmm. stop and be quiet and let our ancestors really come forth and be able to share that mm-hmm. and be able to share that wisdom. But also, you know, in the times where ceremony is being offered, going in there, you know, it's one thing that I really want our relatives to know that are experiencing opioid use or being unsheltered is that we think of them, you know, mm-hmm. we think of them and we pray for you. And that's where I do that.
Well, that's right on. And yeah, I mean, I know that we really have some boots on the ground, people helping, but you are involved in it and you are affected by it. So that's why I asked that question. And it's good that, mm-hmm. that it was a great answer that you do come back to ceremony. And that's one thing as Native Americans we can really do and really do in a good way. And I'm glad you brought that up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit more. Who will be leading the discussion? There will be community members there. How's this looking? I think if we can talk just a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so our panel discussion will highlight those that are part of the community contracted partners with Hennepin County's opioid response. Mm-hmm. And so that our three community organizations funded under Hennepin County currently are Indigenous Peoples Task Force, Native American Community Clinic, mm-hmm. and Little Earth. Mm-hmm. We also will have Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center, a part of that panel as well. And so the leaders of those organizations will be there, or their delegated person that they want to speak on behalf of their community organization will take part. But we'll also have space for people with lived experience to really be on that panel and really share their experience and what they identify as the needs regarding the barriers and access. So we have Sharon Day as Executive Director of Indigenous Peoples Task Force. Mm-hmm. We will have Letitia Franks from Little Earth, and then Dr. Stately has yet to really appoint somebody, but he will be there in spirit. And then our panel will be moderated by Vin Dion, who is one of the men within our community, specifically in our urban community, that is out there. You know, he's the pure example of boots on the ground, and he's out there protecting our community as well as uplifting our men in his work. And so he will be our panel moderator to really guide that conversation and lead us into the space where we really need to share what we need to share as a community as it relates to, again, the impact we see regarding the opioid crisis.
Right on. And so that's Wednesday, October 22nd, 5 to 7:30 at the Minneapolis American Indian Center, in the grandparents' conference room at 1530 East Franklin Avenue. Hey, there's a meal provided. Can you stay on for another segment? We can.
I sure talk can.
Right on. Hey, this is Native Roots Radio, and we're with Nita Vongpeth, and American Indian Liaison, Community Engagement Specialist, and Policy Strategist. We'll be right back. This is Native Roots Radio.
The Minneapolis Police Department is hiring, and we're looking for people ready to lead, serve, and reflect the communities we protect.
Whether you're a new graduate, changing careers, or already in law enforcement, there's a path for you to join our department.
With top-tier pay, full benefits, paid training, and a direct path to making a difference, this is more than a job. This is your chance to shape the future of Minneapolis Police.
Choose service. Choose leadership. Choose Minneapolis. Visit our city website to learn more.
Ever wonder how far you could go with a bachelor's or master's degree? Metro State University is hosting two open house events in October. Learn about their bachelor's degree programs on October 20th. Explore master's degrees and doctoral degrees on October 23rd. At the open house, you can attend a session about financial aid and receive help from financial aid staff. Discover how Metro State can help you take the next step in your career. Sign up today at metrostate.edu/openhouse. You belong at Metro.
Across Native communities, voting is a tradition that brings generations together. Make Voting a Tradition, or MVAT, helps families and neighbors learn about elections, including ranked choice voting on November 4th in Minneapolis and St. Paul. With ranked choice voting, you can rank up to three candidates, giving everyone a stronger voice. Through trusted relationships, MVAT helps neighbors and families get involved in shaping the future of their communities. Vote together. Stand together. Learn more at makevotingatradition.org.
The city of Minneapolis is now on Native Roots Radio with Minneapolis AIR. AIR stands for American Indian Relations. Guest host Christine McDonald talks to people about important things affecting the city's Native communities. Minneapolis AIR dives into topics like public safety, public health, elections, and so much more. Tune in to Minneapolis AIR on Native Roots Radio from 5 to 6 p.m. on the second Wednesday of every month, right here on AM 950.
I'm Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, and I want to be your next United States Senator, and you are listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back, everyone. Hey, we are here with Nita Vongpeth. We're talking about, she is the American Indian Liaison, a Community Engagement Specialist and Policy Strategist and for the city of Minneapolis. And really good to have you on. There's a couple things. I want to just mention the event again a couple more times before the segment's over. And and how powerful and important this will be for our community and people there. So if we could just go by the days and talk about that real quick for the people that are listening on the radio. Oh.
Yes, so we have our upcoming American Indian Opioid Response Forum, where we are centering community voice, partnership, and community impact. It will be Wednesday, October 22nd from 5 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. at the Minneapolis American Indian Center. And we are providing a light feast at the beginning of our event.
That's cool. You guys can listen to the radio show, Native Roots Radio, during that time while you're having your feast. Maybe you can pipe that our show in there. Just kidding. but hey, got a lot to talk about. One of the things too about working for the government, you find out and hear about data. And I know there's opioid data out there. I don't know if you'd like to talk a little bit about that, because that's also troubling for our community.
Yeah. One thing about me is I do love data. However, working in this position with Hennepin County Opioid Response, the leadership has really taken a special step towards data. And our 2024 data will be coming out soon. One challenge with data is that we're typically anywhere from 6 months to a year behind the data. So we are just now getting in 2024 data as it relates to opioid overdose deaths and our non-fatal overdoses. But in preliminary looks at the data, we have seen a major decline in opioid deaths in 2024, about 31%.
Wow.
But for Native Americans, when we put Native Americans under that scope, we're only seeing 11% decline. Mm. And we only make up 2% of Hennepin County population. Mm-hmm. But then again, on the flip side of that, we make up 13% of the opioid death data. Mm. And so looking at this, we know that these are stark disparities, which is why Hennepin County Opioid Response Leadership has really responded to the data and has dedicated to putting more funding or an equal amount of funding into the Native American community to be able to provide our community organizations with the resources to be able to respond to that. So I'm very thankful for that. And really, it's, you know, funding doesn't always get dispersed in that way. So really, really paying attention to the data as it relates to community impact.
Well, that's kind of how, in a good way, Hennepin County is dispersing funds, right? They're seeing a need, and they're really not just rubber stamping it. They are doing something about it and helping you with your work.
Yeah. And when we looked at data prior to 2024 data, we see one of the areas where our Native American community is different compared to others is that our community is the only community where women are dying more than our men. Wow. So since the onset of the opioid epidemic, we have higher numbers with our women. And so that is not the case with other communities that are experiencing an impact. And this trend is slowly changing since the late years. However, those numbers are still higher. Wow. And so to that, our leadership was able to prioritize our Native women under the recent proposal that they offered out to community.
Wow, that's really good. You do have to applaud Hennepin County for really taking notice and taking action on the data. That's awesome. That's got to be a good feeling, and hopefully we'll see some results with that. I know your work is going to help. I think anything we as a community really pay attention to and really rally around, things happen. So that's I didn't really realize what you were doing. I thought you were just hanging out Franklin Avenue and seeing you every once in a while. That's some heavy duty work you're doing.
Yeah, you see me on the good days, Robert. You see me on the good sunny days outside.
Yeah, exactly. I hear you. And then tomorrow's, I think there's still going on at at the coffee shop, there's still the market, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I think, again, just wanting folks to know about our community event. Come share your experience. We know that our community is heavily impacted. And when we talk about community impact, we don't mean that everyone is using opioids within our community, right?
Right.
And we may not be seeing the drastic situations happening, but we may we're impacted because we're impacted all across Indian country with opioid crisis. So I just really encourage folks to come, share your experience, share your thoughts, bring your questions, because without those, we may not have the best information to be able to respond to the community impact. So really just encouraging people to come share with us. Like I said, come enjoy a meal with us and come take part in the community event we have happening.
Absolutely. Hey, and now people are driving. Is there a Facebook page, an event page, or any kind of website that you'd like our listeners to click on and get more information?
Yeah, you can definitely go to our website. It's hennepin.us/opioids. This is going to give you all of the information of Hennepin County's opioid response with our framework, our community partners, any indicated news, but also a highlight on our events. So you will find our events there. You can also take a look at our Hennepin County social media platform, specifically our public health platform. You'll be able to see that on our Facebook there, as well as Instagram, promoting our event.
Right on. And is there a Hennepin County helpline or anything for people that really maybe listening to this or have a relative that we could turn them on to? Do you know of one specifically for Hennepin County?
Well, I will point you back to our website, hennepin.us/opioids. We do have our indicated community partners that offer treatment and recovery resources, as well as street outreach workers that people can connect with on there as well. We really, for Hennepin County, point folks to 211 in terms of any housing needs, but you will find those specific treatment, recovery, harm reduction resources on our website at hennepin.us/opioids.
Well, Nina, this has been fun and it's gone too quick. I just want to read this out loud again. So the American Indian Opioid Response Forum, Catering the Community and Voice Partnership and Impact is on Wednesday, October 22nd, 5 to 7:30 p.m. at the Minneapolis American Indian Center in the Grandparents Conference Room in, on 1530 East Franklin. That building is beautiful, by the way, and I'm glad that it's being used on great things like this. Nina, thank you so much for coming on.
Of course. Appreciate you having me.
We'll do it again, definitely. So thank you so much. Great job. Hey, wow, that was awesome. And I just want to say, if you're listening to the show, you're part of the resistance. From Chief Plenty Coops, the ground on which we stand on, it's sacred ground. It's the blood of our ancestors. We need to resist, divest, join a group, run for office. We're still here. We are the seventh generation.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids Home for Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Pete Schwabba. On the next Nightlight, Milwaukee film critic Matt Miller joins the show to make the popcorn pick of the week. Then joining me in studio is children's illustrator Rob Momartz. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
From Eau Claire to Green Bay.
Oh, my goodness, a powerful run to the house.
house.
And Milwaukee to Madison.
Under duress, and it's a safety.
The tradition of Badger football lives here.
Touchdown, Wisconsin.
Join us Saturday. It's the Badgers and Hawkeyes at Camp Randall. Our coverage begins at 4.
Now we'll get rolling.
On your home for Wisconsin football.
Here on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR.
97.5 WFHR, locally grown radio, and home for the Todd Allball Show, Monday through Friday from 2 to 4.
This is locally grown radio.
WFHR, 1320 AM, W248DE, Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Special Report. Israel and Hamas take a big step toward ending the war in Gaza, President Trump announcing that both sides have agreed to the first phase of his peace plan. CBS's Ed O'Keefe.
The president said he would travel to the Middle East this weekend, possibly Saturday, more likely Sunday, to meet with those as they sign off on a negotiation. What's unclear is whether hostages would be released before the president goes or once he's there.
Trump has just told Fox News.
The big thing is hostages are going to be released. It's probably our time would be probably Monday.
Mona Yacoubian with the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
It is an enormous breakthrough, and it is because of the work of negotiators, certainly the United States, Qatar, which has long played a negotiating, mediating role, Egypt, and now also the addition of Turkey.
Israel's prime minister says he'll convene his cabinet tomorrow to approve a plan for the release of hostages in Gaza. CBS News Special Report, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.